Good afternoon or morning, depending on where you are. Happy Friday the 13th. Welcome to Dakota Midday Science Friday and this week's edition of Tech Radio. Your host, Kent Osborne, is on assignment today, so I'm filling in to guide your hour-long discussion about all things technology. I'm Keely Boltina here at the studio at the University of Sioux Falls, and joining me in the studio is Joel Brovelite, Apple expert, Mac expert. Is there a title I should actually, you know?
Mac guru is what, although it probably should be Apple guru now because, you know, at least half of the questions I field or more are about iPhone and iPad.
Right, because there's a difference.
So, Apple guru.
Okay, Apple guru. I'll change that on my little note here. And on the phone from the capital city, Jeff Litterick. He's technology integration specialist with the state of South Dakota. Thanks for joining us from Pierre, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
Sounds good. I'm glad we've got the connection up. So as we move through different topics today, feel free to join our conversation using your favorite medium. You can email us at midday@sdpb.org. Give us a call. That number is 800-524-3604. And you can also find the show on Facebook. That's facebook.com/techradio. So lots of options to get a hold of us. Send your questions to our tech radio experts, and we'll do our best to get some sort of answer for you live here on the show. So I'd like to start out, Jeff, you were particularly interested when we talked a little bit before the show about talking about CryptoLocker, which is, we hear a lot about things like malware. This is being referred to as ransomware because it hijacks files and keeps them until essentially you pay a ransom, and then they actually give you the files back once you hand over the money. So tell me more about this.
Well, I'm going to preface that. There is no guarantee they will give you your files back. You're trusting the people running this blackmail scheme to do it. And while some people do, some people don't get the code back. And one thing to remember, this is morphing into even more variants. There's now CryptoWall out there, which is a variant of CryptoLocker. So you're going to hear it under a couple different names going forward as different variants of this spread out. And it's kind of working in waves. If you remember about 6-7 months ago, this was really big. Then it kind of disappeared for a while, and now it's really big again as the new variants are coming out. And I don't expect this to ever stop or go away now. They're making too much money out of it, even though the FBI has, I guess, arrested a few people, have gotten a few people, and at least know probably even more, but maybe cannot get into those countries to get those people that are running these networks. And the way this runs, just so you know, and a lot of public agencies have been hit with this, and businesses too. It's just not a home user kind of thing.
And how do people wind up falling victim to CryptoLocker or the different versions of it?
Right now, the main popular way is through email, sending you a link to a website that's hosting it that then uses a vulnerability on your machine to download and install the app itself. The app itself, it just as an overview, it does both your local hard drives and any network or cloud services you use can be affected by this through your network shares, and it encrypts all of your data files. And then unless you pay the fee, they stay encrypted. And after a certain amount of time, usually 72 hours, if you do not pay, they are lost forever because the keys that are used to decrypt them will be deleted. So it's a bad thing. And when it affects a business or like a government, it actually infects the entire kind of file system sometimes, every file that that user has access to, no matter if it's local or remote. So hopefully everyone's running good backups and stuff, because unless you're willing to pay the fee, the only way to get back those files is from a backup that you have. Hopefully the backups were not also corrupted if you didn't catch it fast enough. So it's and one of those new things. I mean, we got used to viruses. We got used to malware. We're just going to have to get used to ransomware. There's too much money in it for people to stop doing it now.
That's crazy to me that 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 this is happening and that you don't think it's going away. But I also have read that there are other people, other hackers, who think, well, this is happening. I'm not going to copy that, but I'm going to pretend that I have a fix for it. And you should download this tool, and then it will get all of your files back, and you won't have to pay any ransom, and they'll be safe. And that's just not the case either. So there are layers and layers of people trying to take advantage of your willingness to click on things and believe them.
Yeah. So far up to this point, the ransomware has pretty much stayed ransomware. Most of the infections we've seen, it doesn't actually download other stuff and try to hijack your computer or steal information from it. It's all about getting money from you to get your files back. Those other sites are using this advantage to install backdoors and malware to grab, you know, financial data to take over your computer and use it as a part of a botnet and stuff. So, you know, there's some honor maybe among thieves a little bit, but we'll see how long that goes, because I would expect new variants to come out that would do everything and above, not only encrypt the files, but steal them all first and ship them off to the Internet to somebody else. So that's a very big possibility of a future version, too.
Hey, Joel, one of your big claims, it's not so much anymore, but over the years has been, well, I have a Mac, so viruses can't really hurt me as often. But now that more people are using it, are
Mac users?
Yeah,
that's not my big claim. That was just the big claim.
Okay, all right.
Not as susceptible, still susceptible like anything else. So, you know, and you could take that with any advice that's ever given to you from any computer, anybody, you know, with regards to safety on your computer. It's the same for a Mac. You know, you have to be careful. And really the most dangerous parts with any security thing on a computer don't have anything to do with, you know, this software or that software or this platform or that platform. It's the it's kind of the old style way of stealing things, you know, getting passwords and, you know, making them available and clicking on links that are in emails from people you don't know, or opening emails from people you don't know, or sending money to people you don't know, or giving your credit card number over the Internet. And that doesn't matter what kind of computer you have. So all of those real safety things, especially the things that Jeff's talking about now, apply no matter what you're using.
And we've been talking about those. You guys have been talking about those since the beginning.
Yes, yes. It's been since really the Internet became mainstream and people were able to purchase things and do their banking, whatever. It has been, a security concern for those involved.
Jeff, specifically, because of your position with the state of South Dakota, how are you encouraging your users to be vigilant? Is it really just stop clicking on links that you don't know where they're coming from?
Well, that's, you know, we do internal user training. We do have filters, spam filters. We have automated defenses that try to weed some of these out. But there's always a percentage that get through no matter what, it seems like. And we have policy procedures to, you know, contain, and once we find, delete that stuff. But even then, we kind of find there's always a small percentage that still clicks on stuff, no matter how much the training is. And there's actually studies out there that say, you know, 1 or 2% of the user base will always click no matter what, and they can't even explain why, because they're telling users not to click. They send them an email 5 minutes later, and they click on it. As a business, as an agency, you have to assume there will always be some people that click it, and set up your defenses in depth so that even if they click, the machines are patched, they're not vulnerable for the exploit. They're non-admin users, so they can't, you know, the software, even if they say yes, run, will not install and stuff like that. There's a lot of tools to restrict what software runs nowadays between different built-in tools to Microsoft and Apple and into antivirus, anti-malware tools. So a good defense in depth is required, because there's always someone that will click. So keep the machines patched, keep the malware scans up, and have software restrictions if necessary in place. And especially do not log in as an admin user on any type of system you're running. Nowadays, it's not required at all for anything. So,
is it particularly unique, because this isn't my full-time focus, that some sort of predatory software is going to attack not just my computer, but the entire network that I'm using? Or is that just kind of the way these things are going?
Most of these things, because most business stuff and governments nowadays have a lot of defenses and fine these pretty quickly. Most of the malware out there targets home users. The crypto lock, crypto wall is a little bit different, that it pretty much targets everybody and tries to. But most malware is really designed for the home user, because what they really want is to steal user financial data and or use it as a botnet. Most businesses, if they're targeted, are specific, what we call a specific target. They're not the random people. They're actually target your finance staff and stuff like that to try to get banking account details. And those are more what we call focused and targeted attacks, where they're a lot harder to detect in general because they're using very custom variants of software. They're very focused. They only attack certain people in the organization and not others. You have to be kind of aware of both types and defend as much as possible both types. Luckily, if you follow best practices anymore, with your defense in depth and non-admin rights, it's most of those fail too. It really requires a zero-day kind of exploit that no one knows about and no one's patched. That kind of hit like Google a year or two ago from China to really do damage if you have your defenses in place.
I don't know. I know this is good to let people know about, and it's a public service. It just, I feel like every time we talk, there's something else that I have to be kind of afraid of, because I'm one of those people that I try not to click on things that I don't know, or, you know, if I don't know where they're coming from. But sometimes I'm just clicking really quickly and I'm half thinking about it. And I you know, what if that's me? And what if I do that to my organization?
And you know what? I mean, it's going to be at some point. You know, I don't think you were around when I told the story last year where, my data got stolen from the Yahoo servers. And, you know, I did exactly what we recommended not doing and used kind of a similar password in a few different places. And I had to, you know, I had a lot of, you know, work to do. It's going to happen to you. Just like if you drive a car, you might get in an accident, or if you, you know, are riding a bike, you might fall. You know, as I was telling my 7-year-old daughter, I mean, you're going to have to, either you're going to ride a bike and fall sometimes, or you're never going to ride a bike at all. So it's going to happen. Don't let it ruin your experience. Just be as careful as you would if you were walking around with an open wallet. You know, just be careful. If I never click on an email or certainly a link in an email, if I don't directly recognize who it is. And one thing, you know, I don't think we talk about this a lot, but another thing I do is if I get an email from somebody that I recognize and then I recognize that as, you know, maybe it's been a spoofed email, I'll actually contact that person, you know, on the phone, or I'll text them and I'll say, hey, you might want to check your accounts. I think somebody's spoofing your email. You know, look out for other people too. You know, if you've got a mother or a father that's not so good with the computer, maybe say, hey, you know, maybe I can look through your email, make sure everything's okay. Or if you need some help, give me a holler, your next door neighbor, your brother, your sister. Or the reverse is true. If you know somebody that's super smart, and maybe they don't even have to really be super smart, just like under the age of 20. And they're gonna be able to figure that out for you and ask for help. It's not as scary as we make it sound. Although every day there's a new threat of some sort, but every day there's a new threat of some sort for, you know, medical reasons or whatever. So don't let it ruin your online party.
And be vigilant, not scared.
I'll add in there real quick. It's links for everything. I mean, we're discussing email because that's how CryptoLock is going right now, but there's a lot of people that just hack Facebook accounts and then send bad links to all the friends on the friend list. I actually had a friend recently that was sending out little advertisements. Now, they weren't malicious or anything, but he didn't even know his Facebook account was actually posting them. So it gave him kind of a scare, too, to figure out what app was doing that. So it's links in general. You know, just use common sense. And if you have your systems patched and you're not an admin, you're actually probably pretty safe. It will happen sooner or later. Something will be stolen either from your local system or from some cloud service you use, or Amazon or something like that. I just had a credit card replaced because one of the online merchant databases got hacked once again. So, you know, life goes on. It's not the end of the world. Just make sure you do best practices and back up your files. especially with CryptoLocker, because that could be the end of your world, depending on what data you lost. So just do your backups, do your, be, have some common sense, and just be a little careful, and you'll be okay.
I have a question. A coworker and I here at USF, we were just chatting the other day about this topic, and I said, you know, I open emails from people I don't know, because in what I do, you know, interviewing people and things, sometimes I won't recognize the media person for a company or something like that if there's a press release. But then I'm, you know, quick to try to identify whether it's legitimate. And again, I try not to follow links of emails that clearly look like there's a problem there. But I remember toward the beginning of having email and things, it was, well, don't open emails from people you don't know. Is there any real risk in opening an email from someone you don't know, as long as you're not following anything additional? I mean, are there things embedded in emails that I should be thinking about? Or is that kind of not really how they attack these days?
Yes, there's a risk. There's a risk in getting a Word file from somebody, or in fact, sometimes even opening a picture on a website because of the way the exploits work. If you keep your systems patched, the risk is very, very low, because almost all of the risk you take in doing that is zero-day exploits that use the operating system vulnerabilities to kind of hide the fact that you're downloading something in the background and it's malicious. So as long as you keep your systems patched and antivirus running, your risk is very, very minimal for that.
Okay, lots of levels of that, Joel.
Yeah, well, one thing I'll say is it also matters how your system is set up to handle emails. Now, there is no actual risk of you opening an email if all that happens is you see the text of the email.
Right.
But very few email programs, including the ones on our phones, just show you the text and then don't run the HTML, or don't show you the picture that maybe has been attached, or the video. So, and some email services are more secure than others. So that's really what it comes down to. If you're just seeing text, it's not going to be dangerous because there's no executable running. If it's just showing pictures, that's another level of maybe slight danger. And you can control all those in your settings, and it's different for every system and every email program. So basically, what you don't want is you don't want an email that has an attached executable or a program or a movie or something to automatically run. So, and most of them are set up to not do that, but yours might get turned on accidentally or something like that, or you might just have an old system that has that automatically set up. So you want to be careful that your settings are kind of turned to the most secure on your email platform. And one way to do that is to make sure you're using the latest version of whatever email client you're using, whether you're using Outlook or Apple Mail or whatever. If you go with the latest, they're going to have the most secure features turned on. So that's the easy way to handle that, I think.
Joel's looking at me right now like he knows that I'm one of those people that just keeps avoiding the updates because
Well, you know, everybody does. And depending on what system you have, you can have it do it automatically, and that's really the way to do it. Some people think, oh, well, I shouldn't get the update right away until somebody tells me to. No. No matter what it is, get the update. Always get the update, no matter what. And if you can do it automatically so you don't use your brain, so much the better. That's how I do it, and I think my brain can handle it pretty well. But I would rather have the system do it for me, frankly.
All right. We managed an entire segment on security there, and I am very impressed.
And you didn't fall asleep at all.
I didn't fall asleep, and I think we've offered some pretty important tips for people, especially as all of this security evolves. So we will take a short break, and then after the break, we'll talk a little bit about South Dakota Public Broadcasting's new smartphone app. It lets your smartphone live up to its name. Trust me, it's very fancy. Joel, you have a minute to download it onto your phone and talk
about it. Already done. I already checked it out. I'm set. I can talk for hours on it.
Sounds good. And then we'll talk a little bit more. We'll give Joel a little bit of time to talk about the Worldwide Developers Conference. He's got some additional topics on that, too. You're listening to Dakota Midday Science Friday. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kent Osborne, and we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Dakota Midday Science Friday. It's Tech Radio. Kent Osborne is on assignment, so you've got me. I'm Keely Boltina, and I am joined by Jeff Litterick, who is with the state of South Dakota out of Pierre, and I have Joel Brovelite, Mac Guru, here at the University of Sioux Falls with me. And I want to start this part of our discussion doing a little bit of shameless self-promotion here with South Dakota Public Broadcasting's new mobile endeavor. SDPB has developed an app that lets you listen to public broadcasting radio and television. You can pause and rewind live radio that's happening and check out the program guide. Tons of different things on the SDPB app. And you can go and find information about it at sdpb.org/app. Or I just went straight to, I have an iPhone, I went straight to the App Store, searched South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and it was there. So, Joel, what do you think of the app? You've got it on your phone.
I do. I think it's very good, especially, you know, it's particularly good since this is the first version and it's already super functional and relatively easy to navigate, which is kind of a hard thing during with a 1.0 release of any, you know, fully functioning streaming app. So it's laid out pretty obviously. It has just four tabs across the top. And the first one is kind of a mishmash. It's a home. Second one is radio. And then under that, you can, of course, stream live radio. And that's the one I use for radio all the time.
Not because you shamelessly admit to the fact that you listen to public radio.
I listen to public radio more than most people sleep.
Right.
And that's the God's truth there. And I love streaming radio, even though I have lots of, you know, old style, put the batteries in it radios all over the place. But I love to stream radio because if I'm working around the house or I might be going to practice or I might go from one place to another and I want to, you know, I don't want to miss that, you know, that story that I was listening to, I've got it on my phone, and whether I'm using headphones or I just unplug it, and I do that a lot where I'll just unplug it and listen on my phone. It doesn't matter whether I'm getting great reception as long as I either have a data connection or a Wi-Fi, I'm good to go. And so I love streaming radio. In fact, I don't think I've listened to broadcast radio, not streaming, more than maybe 10% in the past year. I mostly listen to streaming. So if you haven't checked that out, it's a great way to maybe catch a story while you're at work and want to just pop it up, and you don't have to have any special equipment. If you, you know, just open your phone or open your iPad, which you probably already have, and you can catch a story. And then, of course, they have specific stories if you want to catch something that maybe you just caught the end of or whatever, and that's a great way to do it. And of course, they have the same thing for TV if you want to watch the locally produced TV shows like No Cover, No Minimum, stuff like that, Best of Jazz Fest. And then, which I think is super awesome, a Classical 24, which means you can, instead of just listening to classical music in the morning, you can stream classical music 24 hours a day, which I think is going to be kind of the sleeper feature of this app.
Which is available online. We've always had that, at least recently, had that ability to listen to that first kind of channel online that is whatever you're hearing on SDPB radio right now. And that second one has had that classical music option. So it's kind of nice that they've brought that.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, your phone goes with you everywhere, and it's really hard to take your, whether it's a laptop or a computer, to really take that everywhere. But, you know, if you're like me and you've got your phone with you and you maybe have speakers in this room or that room, or if you've got it set up, you can stream to multiple sets of speakers, which we've talked about in this show. It's always available to you, and you're not limited to just hearing what's on broadcast. You can hear the specific shows and stories that you want to catch or watch the episode you missed, or just, you know, pop on some classical music and do some gardening.
Sure. Well, and the app also breaks things up into different categories, you know, education or kids and family, but they also have places for SDPB sports and our Flickr. So I think that's going to be really cool too, because, you know, just being able to look at those pictures.
Yeah, direct link to the Twitter account, go to the Facebook, go to the full website. And of course, it wouldn't be public radio or public broadcasting if you couldn't donate as well.
Of course.
So there's a button to donate too.
It's bright red button.
Lots of great features.
Absolutely. And I'm one of those people that when the dentist is running behind, I am that person sitting in the corner playing on my smartphone. So this is kind of a nice option. Jeff, I'll put you on the spot. Something you're considering downloading? Or what do you look for when you find a new app that's just right out of the gate?
Well, the problem is I have so many apps and stuff already that I tend to...
Overwhelmed by the apps.
Well, at a certain point, you get all these apps for all the different stuff, and then you kind of forget about them because you just have too many, and you forget all that you have. So, I do, like, for example, I used to do CNN and their app all the time. I got rid of it. NPR was one I used to use but got rid of it because I just, you know, started forgetting about them because I'm getting into more consolidated sources. But, yeah, I do use quite a few apps like that to view stuff and see stories, mainly news feeds and stuff like that. You know, they come in really handy, especially when you need them, like the Kelland one and stuff like that, too, for weather and stories. But if you don't use it all the time, I find, for me at least, it's one of those things that, yeah, you have it, but it gets on the second or third page, and you kind of forget about it over time. And then some apps just don't work very well. So you always find ones that are, you know, buggy and stuff like that, or want you to rate them every time you turn them on, which is kind of one of those bad
things.
It does
drive me crazy. When it always asks me to rate the app. It drives me crazy. Hate it.
It's so annoying. So,
for the record, the SDPB app does not do that to you. And I haven't found...
But go ahead and rate it anyway.
Right,
and
give it
as many stars as possible.
It's kind of like
the higher it gets rated, the more it gets downloaded. And that just helps.
Absolutely.
Frankly.
So it's I think you're right that being brand new, I think people are a little bit hesitant. But
yeah.
I haven't found... I haven't clicked on something or tried to do something that hasn't worked so far. So I'm
going
to
And even if
success.
That does happen, you know, it's an app, so it's right. it's going to be updated. I really see two, you know, uses. If you're listening to this now and you have a smartphone, likely the two big uses you could get out of this is to stream live. You will be surprised how useful that is. Or to go ahead and it's a great way to just browse through and catch a story you might have missed. Maybe they only played it at noon and you never get to listen at noon. Or maybe they only play it in the morning and your morning's 10 o'clock. But there's a story that was really relevant to you that you can just hit up and listen to. It's a great way to browse through the news. So two ways. You can get it live or browse through and see what you missed or maybe what you never knew about in the first place.
And if you already consume through the radio or the TV, the news, and stuff like that, the app is a must-have because you're always going to miss stuff, just like Joe said. And if you're used to it and you like the news sources, then I always get the app for that news source and use it quite a bit because it is something you normally use in your day-to-day life. It's not something new you're going out of your way. It's just an extension of what you already do, and that seems to be in many ways the best apps out there.
Okay, I have one more thing and then I promise I'll let it go. But Joel, I'm not sure if you've seen this on the app. We actually have a built-in sleep timer and alarm clock that you can set so that you can wake up or go to sleep with your favorite radio station, which I just think is fun.
Absolutely. You know, and it's a great way to do it, too. I mean, because you're probably, even though I think it's not recommended, you're probably charging your phone right by your bed like everybody else.
Absolutely.
And you probably, you know, like everybody else, if you do that, you use your phone as your alarm clock. So why not use the app as your alarm clock? However, I would recommend testing it out on a weekend just so you're not
right.
Because I don't think it's not going to work, because I know it's going to work. However, that way you have the peace of mind come Monday morning. You're not going to be panicked and staying up all night making sure the alarm's going to.
And in general, we don't put together stories that we think are going to be as irritating as the regular alarm you use. So you might not recognize that voice as
That's
you know
right.
helping
be,
you wake
be
up.
So comfortable,
so, right?
What a great way to wake up.
Exactly, Joel. You wanted to talk some more about the Worldwide Developers Conference.
Well, before
iOS
right before
8,
we do, I want to slide in here. Apple also made an announcement this week related to public radio.
Okay,
their iTunes Music service is now streaming 40 local NPR stations. I don't think South Dakota's one yet, but I'm sure it will
be
soon. Well, what it is, you know, you can stream your iTunes music, and it's just a direct stream taken from say the app for South, maybe it just didn't make it in, but it's a nice feature that allows it to work with, say, not only computers but the Apple TV and things like that. So if you use iTunes Music and you listen to public radio at all, it's worth checking out. It works pretty well. So you were asking about the Worldwide Developers Conference, which happened right after we had our last show. And
right, like it was like boom.
Yeah, it was,
right then.
Well, it was the following Tuesday.
Okay.
Lots of big announcements. It was all the developer conference, for those that aren't familiar or haven't listened to us talk about it before. It's in San Francisco, and all the people who write software for both the desktop platform and the mobile platform for Apple, basically their own bosses or large software companies like Microsoft, get together, and Apple shows off maybe new versions of the software, maybe new hardware that they're going to have, their classes and updates on how things are done. And this has been a conference that Apple has typically announced new things at. This year it was just software, but I really think the software that they've got coming out, the new version of the iOS for the phone and the tablet, is going to be a huge release. It's going to be available in the fall. And some of the big features, although not all of them are available, or known to us yet, I should say, are Apple's trying to integrate more with the wearable technology, with fitness. And they're doing that in such a way that they're allowing all of that data that's gathered, whether it's cardio or you know, how many steps you've taken, all this fitness that's gathered, fitness data that's gathered through these devices, is housed in the device itself, and that's great news for developers, because then they don't have to write that code, so we can see more apps available. That's great for the consumer, because Apple's platform is as secure as a mobile phone platform is out there, and they talked a lot about security and privacy of data. So you don't have to worry about this little company that does a fitness tracker. Who knows if they're going to sell your data? You know, Apple, if they say they're not going to sell their data, well, unless you just don't trust any big company. If Apple says, you know, we're going to keep your data private, it's all housed in one space, that's really good for you as far as security purpose goes. But the other thing is that data is then accessible through other apps. So if you download this one for walking, or this one for calorie tracking or diet tracking or sleep timing, all of that data is housed in one place. So they all have access to it, so they can all share it and work together, which is the way a lot of apps work. But up until now, a lot of the health type things haven't. So that's huge. And related to that, they also announced that there's going to be a similar category in the phone for home technology. It's called HomeKit for developers. So we've talked a lot about, you know, Wi-Fi lights and thermostat and refrigerator on the show. So Apple's doing the same thing with that data and that technology, housing it in one spot so everybody has access to it. So instead of having one app that turns your lights on and one app that changes your thermostat, you'd have one area that you could do it all from, making it very easy.
Trying to consolidate those different...
Yeah, making it easier for the consumer, which is something Apple's always been very good at. Right now, it's kind of clunky. If you have any of those devices now, you have to open this app and make sure it gets updated and whatever. It's going to be a lot easier. So there's a lot more that was announced, and we'll probably talk about it. I didn't even talk about the desktop operating system that's also being released. Yosemite is what they're calling it. Lots of great features there too. But we'll probably talk about that more in the future as they start releasing. Neither of these will be available until the fall.
Sure, right. So nobody has to worry about, well, what's it going to look like now? How am I going to change this now?
Right.
And that latest version, it doesn't apply to all devices either. iOS 8 doesn't. I understand, right? Like the older iPhones, it doesn't?
You're going to be able to use it on an iPhone 4S and higher, which is a three-year-old iPhone at this point, or certainly by the time it's released. So, and I was surprised they didn't make the cutoff like iPhone 5, and it goes all the way back to iPad 2. Which is a pretty old device. I mean, if you've used an iPad 1 right now, don't get offended that I say an iPad 2 is a pretty old device.
No offense intended.
But so And oh, and I should mention that both of these operating systems are going to be free for download, which is great news for consumers because you don't have to buy anything. But it's also great news for developers because when they write these great new apps, they know that they really only have to write for one or two versions. They don't have to worry about supporting these 9 different OS versions. So,
interesting.
Neat stuff.
I recognize that being the Mac guru, you're looking at this and you're finding a lot of positives. I did, however, read an article on Slate that I must share with you.
Please
I don't
do.
Know if you saw it. It turns out there is a scientific reason that your Apple earbuds get tangled. Because you know they do, and even if you say they don't, they
no,
do.
They totally do. Absolutely.
There are researchers at the University of California at San Diego in the physics department that have figured out the curve with how the length of the wire and the amount of agitation on it make a big difference. And there's this spot right in the middle that literally at the 150 centimeters or whatever it is that they are lengthwise, that's where you're at the top of the curve where there's enough agitation and enough length that they will just always get tangled. And let's be honest, nobody keeps the little plastic things. Well, my husband does, but nobody keeps the little plastic things that you
that
wrap
you
your
wrap
headphones
it
around.
Yeah,
it's just inconvenient.
You know what Apple should do is buy a high-end headphone manufacturer so that they can just figure that out.
There you go.
Wait a minute. They did that. They did that a couple weeks ago. I really think that when we see new phones and new devices, we're going to see maybe wireless headphones that maybe solve that for us. I use a pair of wireless headphones at least half of the time when I keep them charged, and I like that a lot. So.
Then you don't have to worry about when you're running either, how you like hit the cord and
when
it pulls out of the phone.
Definitely when I'm running, that's a problem. or when you're doing anything, you know.
Right.
Just in general, wireless headphones, I think, are awesome. And that's an interesting that people would research that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
It's a very pretty curve,
it is
and Apple
is a
right
pain.
At stop. So
yeah.
One more thing. We're coming up on a break here shortly, but we should touch while we're kind of on this iTunes mobile listening part that Amazon has launched Prime Music.
Yes, last week, and it wasn't a big announcement, but it was kind of a medium. It was kind of the way Amazon does it for some reason. If you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, which at this point I'm not sure if you order anything on the internet or ever watch any videos, why you're not a subscriber to that. I think it's like $79 or $99 a year, something like that. And what it does is it gives you kind of priority shipping for anything you order that is able to be, most of the things
almost
that you order.
Almost anything directly from Amazon.
Yeah,
fits
anything,
Prime.
Yeah, is Prime. So you get kind of free shipping on 2-day, which is awesome. I use that all the time. But you also get access to their online video library. And now to compete with the online streaming companies out there, Apple, Spotify, and the like. Amazon has a free, ad-free streaming service if you're a Prime subscriber, which is really big news. And you know, it's been widely reported, even by Amazon, that they don't really have a number affixed to the value of Amazon Prime. They're just doing it kind of to get people into their fold, and I really think it's working. You know, they keep adding things to this Amazon Prime and free streaming service. If you use a streaming service at all and you're paying for it and you have Amazon Prime, you have, like, no reason, as far as I can tell, to not be using that, depending on how good it is, and I guess we'll find out. But and related to that, Amazon's supposed to be announcing something very large hardware-wise next week. Rumor has it it's going to be a phone, which, if it is, I think is a great move for them. But we won't know until next week.
Interesting. Yeah. I checked. It's now $99 a year. And
$99.
I know that it had stayed the same for
$79 for a very long time.
For a very long time. They also say that they're not saying that they've necessarily got the newest releases of the biggest music catalog ever, but they've struck a bunch of deals with many, artists, Britney Spears, Bruce Springsteen, Madonna, Beyonce, Blake Shelton. I mean, these are...
Anybody with a B in their name,
right.
They've got covered.
Hey, they've got Kanye West and Katy Perry, too, so the K's are also
covered.
Okay,
right. Important.
All right, let's take a quick break after that discussion. Coming up ahead, we'll branch away from computers a little bit. I want to talk about Tesla opening up its patents and saying, hey, check out our electric car technology. We're going to let you see all we've got. And maybe in the last couple of minutes, just talk on how, if you're trying to avoid working this afternoon, you can tap into World Cup matches. Not necessarily as easy as it might seem, but possible depending on your cable service and all of these extras. So we'll talk about that with our experts in just a moment. You're listening to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. Welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. Host Kent Osborne is away today, so I am Keely Boltina, leading the discussion here with two of our experts. We have Joel Brovelite here at the University of Sioux Falls, offering all of his Mac guru information and expertise to us, and Jeff Litterick with the state of South Dakota out of Pierre joining us on the phone. So I know that Tech Radio often focuses on computers and devices like that, but I think electric cars are certainly technology, and on Science Friday we should address this. So Tesla Motors has said, hey, all our patents, here are our patents, they're open source, check them out. And I think it's really interesting when you compare that to some of the other topics we often talk about, like, well, Apple and Samsung are in this huge battle over patents and, you know, who gets what and who owns what, that Tesla is saying, here's our technology.
Well, there's two things about that. And I don't know if Jeff has an opinion, but one, I think it's a super smart business move because, you know, Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, who, if you don't know who he is, he's the guy that came up with PayPal. That was his idea, and then he sold it to eBay for a bajillion dollars. I think it was $1.1 bajillion.
Bajillion.
Would, yeah.
It's a technical term.
Right. And since has just been following his passion in several things. He's also the SpaceX guy. So what he says is it's not necessarily open source, but he says Tesla will not initiate patent lawsuits against anyone who, in good faith, wants to use our technology. So it's a great business move. If you want to sell more electric cars, anybody who wants to make an electric car can make one, make it compatible with the charging stations for Tesla, and it's just good business, you know. If you want more people to eat burritos and there's only one burrito place in town, it's not going to do as well as if there are 9 burrito places in town.
Then you just have to have the best burrito.
Right.
That, that's our analogy.
And I think Tesla right now certainly has the best burrito when related to cars. I don't think there's any question about that. So much so that even Cadillac for its electric vehicles are using, are licensing much of Tesla's hardware and even having them make the engines. So, this is a shortcut for a lot of those companies. So I think it's just really good news. And I hope more companies do this because all it's going to do is increase revenue for them. You know, because if you have trouble or you need to buy a battery and maybe you just want to make a car, you use all these patents, but then you don't want to make the batteries too. You just buy those from Tesla. It's a smart move. Smart move.
Jeff, do you think Joel might be too optimistic in saying, I hope more companies do this? Or, is this a good move? Could this apply to other elements of technology than just electric cars? Or is this kind of a one circumstance sort of a situation where saying that we're not going to enforce our patents is something that's a good idea?
There's really probably two things going on. The most important one is you need to sell more electric cars, right? No one's going to build charging stations and put charging stations up and run them if there's no cars to feed them. You know, it's the kind of the catch-22 hydrogen cars have. The more of them out there and the more standard they are, the better penetration, the more people will buy them. A lot of technologies, either they're open patents, like kind of, you know, DVD and stuff was, with a very minor royalty feed like MPEG-2, or the patents, you know, decay and come off the patent list. That's when the technology really explodes. So actually opening these up now, I think, is going to help the whole market of electric cars and hybrids greatly going in the future for everybody involved, both manufacturers and consumers. There's also another thing kind of going on. They hint into it in their statement releases, is there's a lot of talk about patent reform in general. There's been a lot of, especially in the technology sector, there's a lot of what we call patent trolls, companies that just buy these things up and then sue everybody out of existence with high royalty fees, or if they even come close to using it. I mean, Amazon's just got a patent to taking a picture with a white background. The patent system's kind of totally and completely out of control for a lot more reasons we could probably go over right now. But everyone's getting patents and everything. Amazon had their one-click patent stuff. And the patent reform bill just died in Congress. And Tesla was saying, making the statement that, hey, we need to reform the whole patent system. They don't actually believe in the system as it stands today, that it hinders innovation more than it helps it. So they're also kind of attacking the whole system in general and saying, hey, we need to reform or get rid of this whole thing because it's just totally broken.
Sure. And, your point to the fact that Tesla, it's not like Tesla's competing with GM. It's not like Tesla is really up against Ford in the grand scheme of things at this moment, because if I'm buying an electric car, I'm probably not looking at an F-150 if I want an electric. I mean, you're just dealing with different buyers at this
point.
Not
right now, although they do compete with Tesla in a few areas. I mean, I'd say if you're buying an electric car, you know, any company that makes one is competition.
Right, sure. And GM and Nissan, I know, both have some versions of electric cars. One last thing. We just have a couple of minutes left, but for soccer fans or European football fans, we've got the World Cup going on, and there's some challenges trying to get to see World Cup matches. I know ESPN's streaming all of the matches online, but you have to have a cable subscriber that is one on the list, and if it's DirecTV, you're not a winner. And then your only other option is really if you can speak Spanish and watch Univision, because you can stream those online, other than the matches that ABC is carrying. So any other tips or ideas, or is that just good enough? Listen to it in Spanish.
Well, I think what you could do is you could listen to it in Spanish and then turn on, there are several radio broadcasts on AM. And
okay.
I think there is at least one channel that we get in Sioux Falls, I'm not sure about anywhere else, that I suppose you could turn the radio on and then listen to that part. The other way to do that is to listen to BBC coverage, which I think they're streaming that audio. I don't think you can get the video unless you live there, but the audio you always have kind of access to. I think I'm not sure which radio. It's not Radio 1. I'd have to look it up. But actually, I think if you Google BBC and soccer, you can find the audio streams. So that's another way to do it.
Okay. So there are some options other than maybe sitting at a local bar and trying to catch all of the matches there.
Yes, or a coffee shop. There are several coffee shops in town in Sioux Falls here, I know, that are maybe frequented by more soccer fans than your average coffee shop. So you can check out a new place that you haven't been.
And if you mm-hmm. can't get audio, video, or at work, there's actually if you click on the Google logo, they're actually doing play by plays with complex diagrams and stuff of the matches as they go on. So, and a lot of live blogging is going on of the matches too. So you could watch in Spanish and just look on the web for the actual players' names and stuff like that, and watch the live blogs and the plays. So.
And one commentator I did see said, hey, the word goal sounds the same in English and Spanish, so you'll be able to figure it out. Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us for Dakota Midday Tech Radio. I need to thank our experts, Jeff Litterick from Peer and Joel Brovelite here in Sioux Falls. Also with SDPB, Steve Zwemke, Steve Munson, and Jackie Hendry. Thank you so much. I'm Keely Boltina. Next Science Friday, it's Dakota Midday Innovation. And the next time you hear Tech Radio, your host Kent Osborne will be back. I'm Keely Boltina. Until then, enjoy the rest of Science Friday and have a good weekend.